This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
What the doctor prescribes to ward off the deadly health and economic consequences of coronavirus taking a toll on black and brown communities. As we often say, when white America catches a cold, black America gets pneumonia. And never has that metaphor been more apt, says Dr. Donald Moore. Urban communities of color are likely to suffer the brunt of the health and economic impacts of the coronavirus, and any legislative response must contain targeted relief. We're joined by Dr. Donald Moore, full-time general medicine practitioner, distinguished for his service to his community and his profession, who also teaches medical students at Weill Medical College of Cornell University and nurse practitioner students from NYU and Hunter College nursing schools. Dr. Moore is a board member of the New York Metro Chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program and president of the Provident Clinical Society, an affiliate of the National Medical Association. Dr. Moore has been recognized for his humanitarian efforts in health by the U.S. Congress. Dr. Moore, is it fair to say, warning, warning, COVID-19 presents enhanced danger for the nation's African-American communities?
Epidemics put a stress on all our lives. We're all stressed and we all suffer from epidemics. But what we have learned that the African-American suffers greater with respect to sickness and death than the general population. Viruses actually don't discriminate. However, our healthcare system certainly discriminates. Our social existence amongst African Americans, Latinos, is one of discrimination. Racism defines the individual's existence, certainly from an economic point of view, and certainly the kind of jobs and opportunities. As a physician, I'm in touch with people of various economic levels, the folks that actually clean the hospital. They're doing really hazardous work. All the contaminated material that we produce, that patients produce, that doctors and nurses generate in the course of their work, these people come behind and collect it. Imagine the risk of disease in those individuals. The people that do the actual touch nursing, that clean the bedpans, that make us clean, those people are up close and at very high risk for infection. They go home at the end of the day to their families. Many of them live in situations where they can't really isolate themselves from their families. They live in housing that may be substandard, where many people are living in the same household. So many people are sharing the same bedrooms and bathroom. If the worker at that level gets infected, once they move to their home environment, then we see it's like putting gasoline on the whole thing, and we could see how an infection could spread. Epidemics obviously are much worse in situations where people are socially and economically depraved.
We were speaking before we got online. You took me back to 1918 and raised a very interesting idea about the nature of segregation and why you thought black people were less subject to the contagion of that period.
A fascinating thing was during the 1918 influenza pandemic, blacks had actually lower incidence, which basically means they got the influenza less, and they had a lower death rate. You know, it was quite fascinating. Well, we know that back then the society was certainly was more segregated at that time, and the condition of the black was a lot worse. So the question is, why did they suffer lower influenza disease rates and lower death? My hypothesis is the fact that they were actually segregated. When this COVID-19 epidemic started, the U.S. government said, well, we need to watch the people traveling in from China. So we put a ban on travel from China. Then when it got to Europe, we put a ban on the people traveling from Europe. We know that epidemic disease and a pandemic disease is spread by travel. So that's one way to stop it. But back in 1918, blacks were living under Jim Crow. They were living under segregation. They didn't live in the same neighborhood as the general population. They live in segregated areas. They didn't use the same facilities. They used separate facilities. As it turns out, there was less chance of the black people coming in contact with people who already had the disease. What's different today is that we have less overt segregation. We now have these same people, the black people, the Latino people, who are now coming in contact with people who have traveled, with people who have means, who could have gone to other places and contracted the COVID-19. And the kind of work that they're doing, they're working as home health aides, as delivery people. They're working as transportation people. They're driving the Uber cabs, and they're driving the trains and the buses and so on. So there is more chance now of the blacks coming in contact with the contagion. And once they get the disease, they take it back to their community. And more so, if they get the disease and they spread the disease, the outcomes are likely to be worse because of lack of health insurance, poorer access to good health care. They may be going to a hospital that's under-resourced or a health facility that's under-resourced. And many of them don't even have health insurance, so they just sort of remain at home and delay until disease progresses.
I think we should get into, first of all, whether or not this whole issue of the threat posed to the black community has received the media attention. As a matter of fact, it hasn't. It's scant in terms of national media attention. But in addition to that, look at the hospital situation in New York. Many of the people that I've dealt with will tell me, who are impoverished, and that is through my legal practice, that they almost plead not to go to, for example, I'm sorry, Kings County Hospital. So is there a different level in the city healthcare that's being provided through the hospital system, the private hospital system, and the public hospital system?
Your perception is certainly true of what they think. And their perception is really based on reality. We know that not all hospitals in New York City are resourced in the same manner. We have these major big networks that are much better resourced because they get higher reimbursement from our own government. Medicare does not pay the university, the private hospital, the same rate as they pay a private physician like myself, or they might pay a clinic. Quite often, they're paying a lower rate, and so do the private insurances. So the hospital starts out under-resourced. Then the population that's going to the hospital have greater needs. They tend to come in sicker. Quite often, again, they carry a higher burden of uninsured or underinsured. The racist attitudes of the providers in these hospitals may be different. So, yes, there is clearly a disparity in the level of care that's given to a poor person or a person of a different racial background than the majority population. Private health care, for the most part in America today, is inadequate for everybody. Americans who think they have good insurance eventually find out that once they get really sick and they go to the hospital, in the hospital in particular, because that's where the largest cost of health care is, they run out of insurance. All private insurance tend to have deductibles, co-payments, co-insurances, which means you're paying a percentage of that very, very large bill. Usually, if you have a good job and you get really sick, eventually you may not be working at that good job anymore. So currently we get our insurance from our employer, most people. That actually is an inadequate response to covering the population. So I'm saying everybody has really poor insurance under this current model of employer-sponsored insurance. But it's even worse once we go to other levels. Even our own Medicare, you would think that Medicare is one insurance. Medicare is not one insurance. We have Medicare for the average 65-year-old and older, and then we have Medicare Advantage. What is Medicare Advantage? It's a different Medicare. It's a Medicare in a narrow network where you're told these are the doctors you're going to see. This is the hospital that you need to go to when you get sick. Guess what? Those providers who accept that insurance are paid less than standard Medicare. So if you're paying a provider less to do the care, shouldn't you expect that the care you're going to receive is somewhat less? But it's not just Medicare and Medicare Advantage. It's Medicare, Medicare Advantage, and Medicaid. Medicaid is even less. Payments are less. Whether you have private insurance, private commercial insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, whatever, your insurance compared to other what you would get in another developed country is likely to be less. This goes through all our various insurances. So it doesn't stop with all these, but it goes through our VA system, which you have heard many criticisms about. And, of course, it goes through our workers' compensation system, which is also has its own troubles. Basically, what we really need to do is we need to put it all together. We have a very fractionated healthcare delivery system. We've broken it up into so many different parts, and we're giving each individual a different level. Even, you know, with Obamacare, if you remember, it wasn't just one plan. We had gold plans. We had silver, you know, platinum plans. Why do you need different plans for different people? We're all the same people. When the disease comes, the disease is going to affect us all the same. So are you saying then if I come in with a bronze plan, then I'm really going to get a different level of care? And the answer is yes, because that provider knows what insurance you have, and it's difficult not to respond to how you're going to get paid for a situation. Our insurance system really needs reform, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work for anybody.
There was a call just the other day from a group of doctors nationally who said that the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and the World Health Organization, for example, had failed to publish information regarding black communities who they insist are being left behind as it relates to coronavirus testing. So I wonder if that is your experience and your understanding that even as the pandemic is in some ways indiscriminate, there is a discrimination specifically based on class, most definitely, but race specifically. So do you see a systemic disparity of treatment and concern for the African American community amidst this pandemic?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you recall, when we first got our guidelines on who we should test, it was travel to Europe, travel to China. So again, with the population that we were talking about, the impoverished population, you know, how many made their trips to China and their trips from Europe or came off a cruise ship? Some of them certainly for sure, but that was not the majority of the people who were likely to become infected. So the answer is yes, we have now changed the testing to include more people. But again, it's the facility. Which hospitals are likely to get the test first? Which neighborhood are likely to get the test first? You've heard our mayor or governor says, oh, we'll probably need to rethink where we're doing the drive-by testing and the public testing. And the reason why they need to rethink it is because systemically, the system would have not put the resource in the area that probably had the greatest need. It would put the resource where there was probably the greatest political clout. Isn't that how we distribute resources? So again, you know, our government, which should work for all people, we know doesn't always work for all people in the same way. We have not tested the African Americans, the Latinos in the same manner that we should. But when we started doing the testing, that's when we started identifying the very, very high disease rates. Remember what happened? This information was not forthcoming. It was that our political leaders, the progressive ones, had to say, show us the data. We know you have it. And we literally had to shake the data out of our public health system. That's always been like that. We had to shake the data out of the United States Public Health Service in order to get what was going on in that syphilis experiment, the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. So this is not new.
African-American adults are 40% more likely to have high blood pressure than whites. The American Heart Association reported that among blacks 20 years of age and older, 46% of men and 48% of women suffer from cardiovascular disease. Blacks are 20% more likely to die from heart disease than whites. And we go on and on. Blacks are also disproportionately affected by obesity. And nearly 2.6 million blacks have reportedly suffered from asthma. So to what extent is there any consideration being built in to care for the African-American community who has these higher rates of chronic disease that obviously will affect their prognosis for recovery from the contagion? Is there any consideration for that that you see at this point?
What you've identified is the disparity in the diseases that are endemic. You said chronic disease, which means these diseases are endemic in our society. They're there all the time. But now we're dealing with an epidemic, and what did we learn right up front? We learned that the disease is going to have a higher impact on those who already had a chronic disease, something that was endemic. So when an epidemic sweeps through the society, we get the people that have ongoing pre-existing conditions end up with a much worse outcome. We deal with this by starting at the beginning. The beginning is making sure that everyone, all 100% of Americans, have access to good health care. It's a lot easier if we just have one good product. If everybody has the same insurance, it's going to be a good product because Americans are not going to take an inferior product, right? Why should we? We can afford a good product. So we all have one good product. We're going to take care of everybody. So when the epidemic does come, we're ready and we take care of everybody. So as a group of human beings in wealthy nation, we can all progress. Do we want to leave our children with something that's inadequate for them? Do we want our nation to begin to fail because we haven't taken care of those who need the most care? Do we want a society that the income separation is so wide that only a few are surviving and the rest of the population is lagging behind, dying at much higher rates and suffering? I don't think that's what we want. I think we have a moral imperative to change that. It's an easy political solution to some extent because all we need to do is we need to make sure there is a living minimum wage that one can live with. That's not hard. We know what the number is, whether it's $15, whatever it is. That's a political solution. Single-payer health care that is comprehensive and universal is going to cover the things that we need. It's going to cover our vision. It's going to cover our dental. It's going to cover our long-term care. That's comprehensive. And universal means it's going to cover everybody, whether you just came over the border or whether you've been here since the time of slavery. Everybody is covered with one insurance plan that makes it simple for the providers and make it simple for the actual patients themselves. So, yes, those are the two things. And I think if we just made those two social justice reforms, we would really do so much better. And it is so simple. We have an opportunity now. Like I said, this is an epidemic is a very stressful time for everybody. It breaks apart all our bonds. So we now think and we can figure out what's really important to all of us. It's not the fancy car. It's not eating out in the fancy restaurants. It's survival. It's just living. So we now have an opportunity to make these political changes. So I see an opportunity here, a great opportunity.
One you mentioned earlier, and I just want to highlight this. Urban, low-income workers are disproportionately African-American, and they are the least likely to have paid sick leave. Black workers are more likely to face short-term layoffs or loss of employment, as we can now see, and so on. So how does this fit into, if we're addressing the reality of disparate treatment and racism as it exists in the treatment of the African-American community, during this pandemic, and in healthcare prior to this pandemic, which clearly exacerbates things, the response that people of goodwill, of moral conscience, and social consideration need to advocate as a way of right now, not waiting as we did with Katrina till people are drowned out, most immediately beginning to take up the disparities. What are we to do? What is the prescription? It's the most significant one that we have to fight for health care for all, Medicaid for all.
I heard an interesting comment recently. They said, if we want companies to behave correctly, then we're going to have to compensate them for their loss of income for them to be honest. For example, if you have an impoverished country, that disease breaks out, that could affect the entire world, a pandemic like we're seeing now. And that country knows if we announce that we have such a disease, then we're going to be isolated and we're going to suffer worse consequences. So the WHO and other organizations says, well, maybe we ought to think about compensating countries. And of course, the U.S. government plans to compensate the big GMs and so forth for not producing because they want the workers to stay home. But if you have a home care worker, somebody that's going into the house to take care of another person, and they start coughing, but their only income is that income that they're making on a per diem basis, you're expecting that person to say, you know, I don't think I feel so good today. I should just stay home and not get groceries, not pay the rent. These folks, if they do have insurance, they have the worst insurance. They have the insurance that the moment they don't work today, the insurance stops tomorrow. So the first thing we need to do is to guarantee a basic income for everybody, whether you're working or not, because we know if you're not able to contribute to your securing your food, paying your rent, you're going to be homeless. So we need to have a guaranteed minimum income. We need to make sure when people are not working for health reasons, they get paid for it. And we need to, when they do work, get them a livable wage. Don't make it so they're working and still can't pay the rent. So we need to take care of that. The other part is we need to separate the health insurance from their employment. You know, from the day you're born to the day you die, you are likely to need health insurance at some point. So that should be separated from your employment. There's a low-wage service worker has to stop working because they got infected. What do they have available? COBRA. COBRA says you will be paying the private insurance company the same amount of money that was negotiated, but now you're paying both sides. You're paying the employer part and you're paying the employee part. But wait a minute. I don't have a job. I don't have any income. How am I going to get the COBRA? So you become uninsured. You'll get bankruptcy if you have assets. And if you don't have assets, homeless. The only way we're going to get out of this. So again, I stress two reforms. Guaranteed minimum income, guaranteed living wage, and guaranteed access to health care by providing universal single-payer health insurance.
And is there any particular prescription, Dr. Moore, that you want to offer us to the prevalence of racism during this pandemic as we wind up this discussion?
Absolutely. I do have a prescription. The first is we've got to recognize that this is an epidemic. This is a novel virus, which basically means despite what you've heard from people in high places, we have no drugs for this, no approved useful drugs. We have no vaccine, and we will not have a vaccine. What you're getting as the remedy today is the remedy. The remedy is social distancing. It's quarantine when you have been exposed to the disease, and it's isolation when you do have the disease. Not everybody can perform all of those things effectively. We should be humane to our fellow human beings. We should recognize that this epidemic affects all individuals in the same manner. Nobody has any particular racial predilection to get the disease. A black person is not going to be any more infectious than a white person. A Latino person is not going to be any more infectious than anyone else. So we're all in the same boat. I want to go back to our original thought we had earlier where we said, you know, in 1918 when blacks were separated, they seem to have had a lower rate of infection and death from the 1918 influenza. In this epidemic, the COVID-19-20 epidemic that we're experiencing here in the United States, Asian people had a lot of discrimination. I heard people say, oh, I'm not going to the Asian restaurant. I'm not going to Chinatown. Oh, I'm not getting my nails done and my toes done. And what we're finding now is that they have a lower incidence of disease and lower death rate than the rest of the population. So it is the social circumstance that determine what happens. It's not our human genome that determine what happens. So we're going to have to be humane to each other. We have to recognize that we should not be chasing unrealistic expectations with respect to drugs and vaccine. The idea is that we will get through it if we work together as a society. If the government does the right thing and we as citizens do the right thing, we as businesses do the right thing, whatever the leadership in our communities do the right thing. It's a group effort based on humanity and goodwill to each other. Going in and making sure that we look in on the elderly who may be isolated in a whole variety of ways. You know, if you're infected, don't expose people unnecessarily. Don't have people come in and do things for you just for your own selfishness when you know that you have the disease. You need to be considerate. So I think that's my prescription. My prescription is really just become more humane. Understand that this is a group effort that we'll have to lead to get out of this disease.
Dr. Moore, thank you. And we will heed your prescription. And as a society, we will persevere and triumph over this terrible pandemic. Thanks. Be healthy.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.